We all came here this evening to discuss topics of Krishna, Krishna Bhakti, is it not? Yeah. There are many other things that we could do here in Dubai. There are many, many things that you can do if you have money. Money is needed for doing many of them. Things that you can't do in other places, such as swimming with dolphins and other such frivolous activities. Do you swim with dolphins? No. All right. But we have come here because we have a different outlook on life than that of almost everyone else who think that the purpose of life is just to earn money and enjoy yourself. Actually, most people, they don't even think what is the purpose of life. They never even thought about it, but it's going on like that. A very strong trend in modern society toward, as Srila Prabhupada termed it, sense gratification. Indriya sukh. Indriya tarpan, I guess, is a closer translation of sense gratification. But in bhakti, the whole idea is hrishikena sevanam bhakti. Bhakti ruchyate. To act in such a way that the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord of the senses, and that is called bhakti. And that will satisfy us also, because it's the great paradox of life in the material world, which most people hardly even notice, that we act, everything we do for happiness, and we presume that we will get happiness by increasing our sense enjoyment, but it doesn't happen. We become more miserable. People don't know, they don't even notice. So, or it's like a drug addict. They're so addicted, even if they know it's wrong, or they don't want to do it, but it's too late. They're just addicted. They can't do anything. They have to inject the drug into their bloodstream, or they've lost their choice, their sense of choice, because that addiction is so strong. So, Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada used this term, is not exactly bhakti as the word is commonly understood. The word bhakti is in every Indian language except Urdu, probably. Does anyone know what's the word in Urdu? There must be some similar word. The word bhakti is there. But people, they generally take it to mean devotion or a kind of sentiment. But bhakti means sarvo pad hivinir muktam tatparatvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. There are various definitions. Just on Saturday, I spoke. Someone asked me, what is bhakti? And so many definitions came up. To be free of mundane designations and be completely absorbed in mundane designations means thinking that I am this body, I am a human male or female, or this is my house, wife, children, all these things. I am an Indian, I am an engineer, all this kind of thinking. Mundane designations, temporary designations, which have nothing to do with this soul proper. So bhakti means to be free of this And to understand that I am a servant of Krishna, to be fully absorbed in that, in pure consciousness, engaging our senses in the service of Krishna. So it's a opposite conception to that of materialistic people. Or rather, the materialistic people are different from the conception of Krishna consciousness. People say sometimes, why are you so different? And we may say to them, why are you so different? The real consciousness is Krishna consciousness. And materialistic consciousness, that is called Viparyaya Smritihi in Srimad Bhagavatam. Materialistic consciousness is called an opposite way of thinking. Bhayam ditiya bhinivesha tasya ishadape tasya viparyaya smritihi. This world is the world of fear, because we have taken up something different to that which is our real constitutional position of service to Krishna. We are absorbed in Maya, that which is not. So we were actually envious of Krishna, and therefore we're in the completely opposite consciousness of that which we should be. Or as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used the term, apaswartha parayana, which means strongly attached to that which is completely opposite to our real self-interest. What could be more foolish than that? Like the drug addicts. Maybe you... Do you see in Dubai... I don't think you see drug addicts wandering around the streets. But at least in the civilized world, that's one of the things that makes the civilized world civilized, seeing the soca in big cities like... London, of course, I know very well from doing book distribution in London. You see drug addicts wandering around the streets, and they're all very thin because they don't eat, they just take drugs. Heroin especially, heroin. I don't know what the situation is now, but this was, I'm talking about the 1970s. So they're completely addicted to that which is not at all good for them at all. Shooting heroin into your body, addiction means you're dead. Heroin addiction is very difficult to overcome. It's just a matter of time. That's all. So, but they're addicted, and they know, they may know or feel it's wrong, but they can't do anything about it. So material life means being addicted to that which is opposite to our real interest, because our real interest is to... What would be in our real interest? First thing, don't die. If you think, well, that's not possible. Well, why not? Why not? Live forever and have full consciousness, expanded consciousness, instead of this little consciousness of my little world, but full consciousness. And full bliss, Satchidananda, live forever. Otherwise, I was going to point to the baby. The baby's gone. There we had Dehino Sminyata Dehe. Oh, that is over there. So, baby, a little bit older. Then I have to look for some. We don't have any really old women here, but anyway. He could have put you all together and made the changing bodies. What's that called? Diorama? What's that called? Statue or something? Exhibit? Otherwise, spot life. Srila Prabhupada used to call it spot life. We're here for a short time. Grow up, grow old, and then off. Gone away. Don't know where to. And in the meantime, we enjoyed sense gratification. So Krishna consciousness means udaradhi, expanded intelligence, not thinking just in terms of my tiny little world. We're all like goldfish in a bowl. Do they still have goldfish in bowls? Probably they don't have that anymore. But they, have you seen a little bowl this size and there's one fish swimming around? They still have that? So, goldfish in a bowl. So for the goldfish, the whole universe is that little bowl. He doesn't know anything more. That's all. He goes up this far, down that far, and then round and round. Like that. Something that's like the sound of the mouse on the Ferris wheel, right? He's running and running, going nowhere. So like that, we're all in a very little world. My worries, my cares, my family, my country, even my country. It's a small world. The big world is the world beyond birth and death, the world with Krishna. So devotees, they have a broad intelligence. They don't just see this little, tiny, little place I'm in. But how even this one planet, it's bigger than we can accommodate in our understanding. Just like I was talking with Tapan about Vietnam. And what's the population? 70 million. 70 million population. Yes, stick that behind. That's better. Oh, no, I'm moving again. There's 70 million people. How many people can we relate with? Vietnam and then the Kampuchea is right next to that. That's only a small population. Okay, about 4 million, 5 million. It was more, but a lot got killed. Laos, another small part. And then Thailand is about 70 million, something like that. So many people. So many countries. We can't even imagine to think of this. And this is only one tiny little planet. So expanded intelligence, to see beyond our tiny little world that we live in, the little cares we have. Of course, it seems very real to us. Just like I have a fractured wrist. So, the pain is real. Can't say it's totally unreal, but I'm not going to make it in the newspaper for having a fractured wrist. Maybe if I was Bill Gates, I might make it in the newspaper for having a fractured wrist, but not B.V. Swami. It's not a big thing, but to me it's painful enough. But to see beyond this, my little world. You see, I often give this example that it may come in the newspaper that 500 people killed in a train accident or something. The person's reading it, drinking his coffee, and, oh, it's too hot, I burned my tongue. And to him, he burned his tongue on the coffee, and that, to him, is more important than 500 killed in a train accident. He cares more about that than the 500 killed in the train accident. So we're all stuck in our own little world. But Krishna consciousness means to see, yeah, that's the highest level. Sarva bhuteshu ya pasyat bhagavad bhavavat. To see all living beings. Not just ourselves. And of course to see Krishna. So it's possible to do that in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna consciousness means not to be thinking of myself, my own enjoyment, but to think of Krishna, what Krishna wants, what is Krishna's plan for me. And even if there is suffering, of course there's no question of if there is suffering, definitely there will be suffering, to see that as also as Krishna's plan. Krishna has some plan for me. Krishna is giving this to me. This is some nice lesson for me. What is Krishna's we should always see in this the changing situation of this world. Everything is always changing. Especially in the modern age. Previously life was very settled and predictable, but in the modern age it's fast and everything is changing, and you might have been in your job for 21 years, and then one morning they say, well, it was nice knowing you, and goodbye. Of course, no one's in a job for 21 years, but they'll just throw you out one day to the next. Or you could be in a marriage for 21 years, and then one of the partners says, well, it wasn't that nice knowing you, so anyway, goodbye. That also happens. Or by time, someone just dies unexpectedly. And it's quite common nowadays, someone 30 years old, 40 years old, just die. So life is unpredictable. But if we see that by bhakti yoga we make our connection with Krishna, then we can know that everything Krishna, he's doing for my benefit. Even if it seems very bad, we can understand that this is something Krishna has to teach me here. I have to learn something here. So this is a devotee's attitude. Devotee is fully surrendered to Krishna. That is the meaning of a devotee. We were just saying, Atma Nivedam Tua Padekari. Hoinu Paramashuki. Dukkha Dure Gelo Chintana Rahilo. Chodike Ananda Deki. This is what happens when we surrender to Krishna, says Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That having surrendered to Krishna, we become very happy and all our distress goes away. There's no anxiety. And everywhere we see simply happiness. This is, what happens when we fully surrender to Krishna. Now we may think, well, it's not very possible for grihasthas, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a grihastha and had great responsibility, government service. And there was office politics there too. Later he explained, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained that after he retired, he was in Kolkata and he met one British person who'd been in the higher ranks above him. And the British man came and apologized to him for all the politics he'd done against him. He said, I was always trying to keep you down because I was afraid that any Indian being so intelligent shouldn't come up so far. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was, because he's very intelligent but simple-hearted as a Vaishnava. So he said, I didn't even notice. I was just doing my job. He wasn't so ambitious to have to be such a big position or any such thing. So that's always there. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, despite all many, many difficulties, if we see the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, many difficulties, first wife died. In his childhood, he's from a very rich family. Then in childhood, the whole family was, practically the whole village was destroyed by plague, and then he himself had many health problems, and he had to, because he was government servant, he was posted in different places, and then he had his own existential problems which were resolved by taking to Krishna consciousness. But even then he didn't have much guidance. He's an exceptional figure in that regard. That he was attracted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, but he couldn't understand why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was attracted to Krishna, because he'd been raised with a modern education in which it was portrayed that Krishna is a very bad person. So he went through all these different personal doubts. Of course, we should never think of our acharyas as being ordinary people. They are. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Radhar Nijajan. He's personal associate of Radha. So we should never think of them as ordinary people. But they show, they go through that just to show that we who are actually stuck in this material world, anadi karma phale, pari bhavarna bhajale, tori bari nadeki upai. This is our, he's singing this, but this is our actual situation. Since due to beginningless karma fall, results of activities in this material world, we have fallen into this ocean of material life, and we have no clue how to get out of it. So they teach us that how to get free from this material world and come to Krishna. So that is an inspiration, should be an inspiration for all of us, that we can do. It's not only for sannyasis. It's for everyone in every station of life. Of course, we shouldn't think that in household life we're not sannyasi, so we should just take it easy. Because bhakti, that udaradhi, I was quoting that. That term comes up several times in the bhakti literature. In the well-known verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, that is, akama sarava kamova moksha kama. What's the next word? Udaradhi. Then the next word? Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushamparam. So, often people quote this verse that, oh, well, even if you have all kinds of desires, you can engage in bhakti. That's stated. But then also the term is there, tivrena. One should very strongly, powerfully, positively, focusedly perform bhakti. And if you do that, then you won't have any material desires left. That's what happens. A great example is there of Dhruva Maharaj, who had very strong material desires, because he had very strong material desires, but he fully dovetailed that in bhakti. And as a result, he ended up with no material desires. His desire for material enjoyment was fully eclipsed by the desire to serve Krishna. So this tivra bhakti, a very focused, powerful, intense bhakti, that is for everyone. Of course, the circumstantial life or the circumstances that the grihasthas find themselves in is different to that of the sannyasi. But the principle of bhakti is the same for everyone, because bhakti is sarvopadivinir moktam. We're not grihasthas, we're not sannyasis. The principle is the same for everyone. Anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam. To do that which is, to always and in every circumstance do that which is favorable for the service of Krishna, and always and in every circumstance to reject that which is not favorable. So that's true for everyone. In different circumstances, that has to be applied. So the basic principle is to act for the satisfaction of Krishna within whichever circumstances one may be in. So we don't find anywhere in Shastra that it's recommended that, well, you just relax and do bhakti. We don't find anywhere relaxed bhakti. Grihastha you may be, but that license for sense gratification, but that doesn't mean you drive like a madman. Or license is granted to someone who know they know the rules and regulations and they follow them, and then you get a license. That's your license. There is allowance for some more materialistic propensity, some indulgence, but it's a license. It's not a just do whatever you like. And the principle for everyone is to always act in a manner that is suitable for advancing in Krishna consciousness. So it's an intense determination, undertaking. It's an intense undertaking for everyone. We don't get Krishna's mercy by being relaxed. That doesn't mean that we have to all become completely tensed up and overstressed. But in bhakti means that the more intensity there is, the more there is bhakti. We worship Hanuman. What for? Not that he was just, looks like it's too much of a jump. I'll just go back and tell Ram that, well, you know, we tried. And you're very merciful, so, you know, you can go there yourself and check it out if you like, but I didn't jump. And there would have, then would there have been, Hanuman would not be worshipped. Hanuman is always chanting, Ram, 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 Ram. But that's not why we worship him. Simply chanting, that's not why we worship him, because he practically showed by his endeavor in service that he was prepared to do anything for Ram. So that is bhakti. He became so angry at Ravana that he burned Lanka. So you may say, well, he didn't control his senses. He should have been, you know, more broad-minded and, you know, try to see the other side of the story. But he was angry. That's good. Should be angry. If you have bhakti, then why should we not be angry at someone who's such a rascal and a rogue and a wretch as Ravana? So Hanuman is glorified for that. Not for relaxing. He didn't relax. He never relaxes. All the devotees, the more intensity, the more bhakti. If there's less intensity, then the less bhakti. And if there's no intensity, then it's not bhakti at all. It's certainly not the kind of bhakti that's going to make Ram feel that now I have to embrace you. Ram embraces Hanuman. What for? Because Hanuman said, well, yeah, I really like you, Ram. And he didn't just say, I really have a feeling in my heart for you, but he showed by his activity. He was fully dedicated. So that is the standard. Of course, you may say we can't all be like Hanuman, but actually we should. In our intention, we should follow in the footsteps. That's the word, the term Srila Prabhupada used to use. Follow in the footsteps. We can be like the squirrel, or we can be like Hanuman, but the intention should be to serve. To giving all. Not holding back. And not thinking that, well, you know, okay, we'll do bhakti. We're doing bhakti. It's very difficult for me to, I can't understand actually this, some things, how some people, they come up, they get initiated, you know, which means no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. So it's quite a high standard to follow, but then they'll go to movies and go out to restaurants. You went so far, and then you're still trying to find some little way out to enjoy this material world. But anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya varjanam. How is going to watch a movie going to help you serve Krishna and become closer to Krishna? It'll take you the opposite way. How is going out to some kami restaurant for the pleasure of the tongue, which is basically what it is, going to help us advance in bhakti? It's completely opposite to bhakti. So it's not that grihastha, they have a license, so they can do whatever they like, and it's okay because we're grihasthas. Guru is very merciful, so just by his mercy. But we have to do our part also. We have to actually be serious about Krishna. If we do things which we know or we should know are completely opposed to the principle of bhakti, then we can't expect to get bhakti, because bhakti is a gift which is given to those who want it. But if we deliberately act in a manner that is pratikul to bhakti, then we're telling Krishna that, you know, I'm not that interested in you actually. I'm, you know, interested in this material world. It's quite good, quite nice. So, all right, we like you, Krishna, but we like this material world also. But it's bhakti means intense. Atma nivedana. Full surrender. That's what it is. Of course, we can say, yes, yes, you can do that, you can do that. We can encourage people like this. But actually, if we actually want Krishna, then there's no halfway or three-quarters way. It's all the way. So actually, every devotee is meant to be a sannyasi. Not necessarily in sannyas ashram, but in the mood of full surrender to Krishna. So this tivrena, we don't find anywhere in Shastra or in the examples of our acharyas that they recommend that, yeah, you do a little bhakti, a little this, a little that, and enjoy the world and at the same time be happy in bhakti. But it's like trying to mix oil and water. They don't mix. You can unnaturally stir them together for some time, but as soon as you leave them, they'll again separate. So Krishna consciousness means to act for the satisfaction of Krishna. And that is a principle of bhakti. It does, like I say, it's not only for someone in some status of life, not only for sannyasis, but for everyone. When we take initiation, what is the actual initiation vow? The essence of that is that we have taken the sankalpa vow. What's the word? Vow. Sankalpa. Pratigya. Yeah, what's the English word? Vow, I guess it is, or the vrata, something like that.
English.
What's the English word? The sankalpa. Vow, I guess, is the word. Vow. I'm trying to. There is some word. I can't think what it is. We've taken the vow to do whatever is required to come to Krishna. The actual initiation vow is one of surrendering to Krishna. Now our life is meant for surrender to Krishna. And in one sense, the 16 rounds and 4 regulated principles, they're incidental. The essence is surrender to Krishna. It's not any formula, it's not mechanical. It's not that just, well, you do this and you do enough chant. Okay, someone was saying to me, that they'd heard in a class that someone said if you chant 1 billion names, then you're guaranteed to go back to Godhead. But there's no guarantee by any mechanical method. What is that? That bahu janma kare jadi shravan kirtan tabuto na pai Krishna pade prindam. We can do bhakti for many lifetimes and not get Krishna praying if we make offenses, if we have the wrong outlook and the wrong attitude. Otherwise, very quickly, we can, one name of Krishna, never mind 1 billion names, ane ashe bhava koi, Krishna shevam, ek Krishna name pai etodham. With one Krishna, if we chant once even, very easily we can get free from material existence and attain the service of Krishna. If we even once chant the name of Krishna with sincerity, with purity, which means niraparadhe namaloy le pai premadham, without offenses. So, the essence of the initiation vow is to surrender to Krishna. It's the at least to be on that path. It's understood. The very fact that we take initiation means that it's understood that we're not there. And it's not just by taking initiation that you immediately become a pure devotee, but the aim is to be there, to attain to pure devotional service. That means anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya vajanam, rakshishati ti vishvaso, guptritve varanam, tata, atma nikshepa karapanye, sharviha sharanagati. The six angas or limbs of sharanagati. Sharanga sharanagati hoibe jaha taha prarthana shune shri nandakuma. Krishna nandakuma hears the prayers of those who are in sharanagati, which means the six anukulyasya sankalpa, acting only for Krishna's, doing whatever is favorable for Krishna's service, rejecting everything that is unfavorable, having faith that Krishna will protect me, Krishna will maintain me. Throwing atma nikshepa literally means to throw ourselves at Krishna, to run to Krishna. And karpanya, which means humility. And actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his analysis of sharanagati, he puts that first. That's listed number six, but he puts it first in his songs about sharanagati. Doina, he calls that. Thinking oneself very, very lowly. So that is required for every devotee. That is devotion. At least initiation means to accept oneself to be on that path. Otherwise, it's not just formula, but there's a change of heart. Change of heart. That should happen. In our way of thinking should be changed. It's another very common term of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the way of thinking. We should come out of the materialistic way of thinking and think like a devotee. The devotee thinks, how can I do everything for the pleasure of Krishna? Everything should be for the satisfaction of Krishna. We are very much influenced by the atmosphere that we are in. We are surrounded by a whole society where everyone thinks, or actually they don't think, that's the problem, but they, within the constricted manner of their thinking, they think that sense enjoyment, money, power, sense enjoyment, this is the goal of life. This is, people talk about being a success, which means to have lots of money, have what's called a good job, and have money, and they call it a success. And if you also happen to be fully stressed out and a chain smoker, and have a dysfunctional family, but that doesn't matter. As long as you have job and money, that's called you're a success. So very strange way of thinking. Apaswartha parayana. But we are fully surrounded by this atmosphere. Therefore, devotees have to think in a different way and create an atmosphere among themselves which is favorable for devotional service, because the whole way of thinking of the materialistic society is just is exactly favorable for going to hell. That's all. That verse is there in Gita. What is that? Karma. Trivita narakasya idam dwaram nasham atmanaha kamas krodhas tatalogas tasmat etat trayantya. The three gates to hell. lust, greed, and anger. Therefore, an intelligent person should give them up. Now, we can factually see that people who are overcome by lust, greed, and anger, they're already in hell by their consciousness. And the world situation they create is hellish. What they're doing, spoiling the earth. They knew for years and years and years what they're doing is going to spoil the whole earth and the environment. Now it's happening and it's too late. They knew it was going to happen, but they're just so greedy. They want to mine the land and make pollution, and they don't care. Just they want, let me enjoy now. It's exactly showing the mode of passion. Enjoy now, suffer later. They say enjoy now, pay later. So materialist, the whole materialistic outlook is enjoy now, suffer later. And that enjoyment is also tucham, insignificant. Yan maituna di griha medhi sukham hi tucham. So devotees have to think in a different way. If we're thinking, let me enjoy the world, and also I'll be in bhakti. It's in itself a perverted way of thinking. And if we partake of this, the materialistic way of thinking of the modern civilization, then we're in hellish consciousness. The idea that I should have a good job, enjoy myself, show myself to be a great success, is all pratikul to bhakti. This is all opposite to bhakti. The very idea of thinking I shall be successful in this material world is inimical to bhakti. The whole modern society, everything, all wrong ideas, all everything wrong. And they're so foolish that they think this is the apex of human advancement. As Prabhupada said, that our movement will go down in history for having saved human civilization in its darkest hour. We're thinking, oh, advancement. Now India is becoming like the West. Why do you want to be like that? You see the society. Why? What do you want to be like that for? But just because the whole education system and the newspapers and everything, just be like this, be like the West. Why? What? What's there? What is there to have from that? But Indian people, they don't have any clue about their own culture, or the culture which is meant for self-realization. No idea. They've lost it. It's protecting Indian culture, what's the question of protecting it? It needs to be restarted. Young people have no idea. No idea. Maybe they get something in some movie, some vague thing, or someone touches someone's feet or something. No idea. They just say, they don't question it. Go to school, work hard, get a job, get money, get a car, that's it, that's life. Just completely mura, completely fully, like a donkey. A donkey doesn't think, just get the load put on your back, walk forward, walk back, get some more loads to walk back, and then you get some grass at the end of the day, jump on a she donkey, get kicked in the face, and that's life. You don't think, no? That's life. I'm a donkey. Not even that much philosophy. The people have no thinking. No thinking. So, we're distributing these books, Srila Prabhupada's books, just to give people a brain, as Srila Prabhupada said. No idea what the purpose of... Never mind, no idea what the purpose of life is, that there is any purpose to life. They never even thought about it, that there is actually any purpose to life. The purpose of life is to know who we are, who is God, what is our relationship with Him. So also we need to create our own communities, own school system. It's a great ambition that Prabhupada had to to change the whole society, starting with our own communities. It's a great ambition, because otherwise, if we're living among materialistic people, then we have to compromise so much to their way of life and their way of thinking. Better we live in our own communities and teach children Krishna consciousness as a full-time engagement. Not that they're mostly at school getting taught how to be a complete demon, and then you at home you try to give them some Krishna consciousness. So it's fighting against the tide. So better to have our own communities, and these those who are who've understood Prabhupada's books, they can gravitate toward that. Of course, you can be Krishna conscious in the secular world, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur also showed. That is possible. But now, of course, the whole society is extremely degraded. Very bad situation. So we should look to that. Make our own communities. We have children. The responsibility is to give them that knowledge and that way of life by which they will not get born again. Namochyadya samapeta mrityam guru nasasyat patisna sasyat pitana sasyat jananina sasyat jaivanga sasyat. All these, we should not be a guru, father, mother, husband. Don't take any respect from anyone unless we can deliver them from birth and death. That is the responsibility. It's a very heavy responsibility. So, yeah, it's intense. Krishna consciousness is intense. There's no actual relaxed bhakti. It is intense. It's a declaration of war on Maya. That's what it is. So, not everyone likes to be a soldier. We're also jihadis, but without guns. Our cannon, the cannon to blast away Maya is what? What did Prabhupada say? Anyone know? The Hare Krishna mantra. It's the cannon to blast away Maya. But that Hare Krishna, that we have to be calling out to Krishna, not send me some inexhaustible supply of potato chips or whatever we think is sense gratification. But we should be calling out to Krishna. Krishna, please engage me in your service. Not calling out to Krishna, hey, you up there, do something for my service. So it's a change of outlook required for everyone. So those are some thoughts for this evening. Okay. What does that mean? What's the significance of that?
It's supposed to come before you
start. It's at the end of the class. And then is that to say that, well, okay, we accept the class, or or does it mean that, you know, all right, we're being polite. Don't really accept it. But anyway, here's a garland.
I didn't want to interrupt the flow of your thoughts.
Okay, all right. All right, any question? Young girls have any question? How can you fully surrender to Krishna in grihastha life? You can follow the ideal of Bhaktivinoda. Follow the ideal of Srila Prabhupada in his grihastha life. It wasn't easy for Prabhupada. I mean, even materially, You know, he had a job for a short time, but he was... When we say materially, of course, we shouldn't think that there's anything material about Prabhupada's life, but I'm seeing the side which would normally be considered material. So it was a struggle, you could say, in business life. His family was not cooperative, but he never had any intention then for full and pure devotional service. He always was... He was pushing himself how to preach, especially in preaching. He was pushing, studying Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He wanted his disciples to study the Shastra. So, studying, preaching, practicing.
There's a few questions here.
Oh?
I just wanted to make one point. There are some of you who are totally new, and some other devotees. There are some questions here which may touch upon some of our looking like some issues in the yatra where we look differently. So please understand that you are in a specific meeting pertaining to Guru Maharaj and what his views are in that regard, and there may be some differences there, but some very interesting questions there.
How can we differentiate between good kirtans and kirtans performed for entertainment? Good kirtan means Krishna has to say. Kirtan is for Krishna's pleasure. So if we do kirtan for Krishna's pleasure, that is kirtan. How should we handle the influence of modernization and woman liberalization movement sprouting within ISKCON? Difficult to say. Well, my response is to one thing, set up communities where we really want to be focused on what Prabhupada wanted us to do and what the Shastra says, rather than just going with the flow of modern society. And well, within ISKCON we can respect everyone and associate with devotees whose association and understanding we find is favorable for advancement in Krishna consciousness. Some senior devotees, disciples of Srila Prabhupada, chant Radhe Radhe Sham Sham during the kirtan, and devotees have to reciprocate. What should we do? You have different choices. You can walk out if you like. That's one thing you can do. Or just not chant. That's all. I'd stick to what Prabhupada said. They often say senior devotees, but I don't think anyone's more senior than Prabhupada. So better to follow what he says. You said it's good to have a website having all information about the books by ISKCON devotees which are to be read and not read. Any updates on that? Any updates? Websites? Yeah, good idea. Good idea to have websites, but seems that we're not in a position to run so many websites. There's so many things to do. And... so many things to do, but not that many people dedicated to doing it. So many good ideas, but maybe time is separating them. Can we eat in a restaurant owned by devotees? Who owns it is not the main question. It's who's cooking like this. We recently learned that the Amish community's success is based on their children. Of course, that's subjective to say that, but that may be one of the main factors. How to bring up our children? Here in Damodar Desh, children, they chant shlokas nicely, but they are attracted by the electronic gadgets and spend time in that. How to divert their interest toward Krishna consciousness? Well, that's just what I was saying. We're surrounded by the ocean of Maya, so it is very difficult to train children, because we can't expect them to be great philosophers from the very beginning, and they see everyone around them and it seems like they're enjoying themselves, and mostly people they don't want to be thought of as strange. Some people want to be thought of as strange, but most people, especially among children, they're always making fun of each other. They want to be seen as accepted within the group. So within the group, if they're all watching pornography on the internet, they may think, well, I'm going to do that too. They don't think, is it good or not for my personal development? So what to do? It is very difficult. And you have to, that's what I'm saying, you have to train them from the beginning. That what is the purpose of life? And what is right and what is wrong? You have to tell them. You have to instill in them the idea that this modern society is not in our best interest. And sense gratification is not in our best interest. We can't force it on them, but we can, if we live ourselves very strictly in Krishna consciousness and preach to our children, charity begins at home. So, Hare Krishna. We'll finish there?
We come across some of our devotees. I've seen a face of that myself, where we get so stuck with our career and work that it completely saps our energy with regard to materially speaking, health or family, or everything goes out of the window. And
yeah, everything. Bhakti goes out. It's working so hard. Victim of circumstances. So what to do? You may be a victim of circumstances because you're married, you have to take responsibility, and you might not be able to find any other form of income than something which takes your time, your energy, your life. So it's very difficult. What can you do? Pray to Krishna for a better situation. May not be easily forthcoming. Kali Yuga is very difficult. There's no doubt. No doubt about it. It's a very difficult age. Take help from devotees. Associate with devotees as much as possible. By associating with devotees, I don't just mean hanging out and going to some restaurant with some people. But associate with devotees means those who are very seriously practicing and helping others to do so also. Take that association which will actually help us to advance in Krishna consciousness. So, you like little babies, is it? Every little girl likes little babies. But in the modern age, they're trained, you have to become an airline pilot. You have to have a career. So it's a natural thing. Little girls like little babies, but now they're trained not to like it. That I shouldn't get married, I shouldn't have children. I should show myself to be great in the material world. So it's a very unnatural society that sends the women to fight in wars, and very strange. That's why we still see in the villages that in Bangladesh or Maybe I'm thinking especially in Bangladesh. Even in India, the whole culture that in the villages, it's money culture now. It's all cash crops. But people are like real people, in as much as the men are men, the women are women. The men are not trying to be women, the women are not trying to be men. They know their role, what they have to do. They're not aspiring for some pie in the sky kind of career, or they're not cutting a profile which they picked up from the TV. They're just natural people. Difficult to find people who are nowadays in the world. We find in the modern urban life, a TV-based life, everyone's consciously or unconsciously imitating the profiles they see on TV. I see the boys and girls nowadays playing cricket in India. I don't watch cricket on TV. Actually, I don't watch anything on TV. But I can tell from the way they act that they picked it up from TV. They'll hit a ball and then they'll hold the bat like that, and you can see it's just some kind of posturing that they picked up from someone on TV, because it's quite unnatural. Or the way they walk, holding their bat, and you can understand it's just copied from some professional cricket player on TV. They're just copying something else, or some kind of profile, which is ridiculous. So we should take as our... Everyone follows role model. So our role model can be Prabhupada, Hanuman, I was mentioning Hanuman, Sita, Anusuya, for the girls. That should be the role model. And that was there in every generation, you see. That people could really look up to their parents and grandparents and feel proud and want to be like them and not want to act in a way which will displease them, because they're brought up by people they're raised by people who they can see are genuinely morally robust people. So you wouldn't want to disappoint them and you want to live up to their standard. Like your parents, like very much like that, huh? Very strong in their moral principles. So you wouldn't want to, you wouldn't want to come home drunk or something like that, because, I mean, at least for that reason, you just wouldn't want to, you'd think it'd be the worst thing you could do to disappoint them. But in the modern age, the parents themselves come home drunk. So how are they going to get any, how are the children going to get any moral training? Just as I was coming into Dubai, I was coming, you know, you come in, I came in on Jet Airways, so you have to, if you come on any other airline than Emirates, you have to walk like, you know, 700 meters or something to get to the immigration. So there was one man who was just like, you know, to go down the escalators as you're going from the planes to the immigration, there was one Indian man with a bindi, and he was like stuck, he'd gone the wrong way, he was completely drunk coming off the plane. So he was maybe 50 years old, something like that, he was in a suit and a tie, had a bindi and drunk. Couldn't work out how to, you know, where he should be going. So what kind of example is that? What example is he going to show to his children? So the best you can do is to be a good example for your children. That's the best you can do. And they may get misguided and misled, but then they can't help but be that the example of their parents will make a big effect on the life. Obviously, the parents make a big effect on the children's life. If they are parents, because in the modern age, in the Western countries especially, there are many parents, they don't really act as parents at all. They don't see their children. They couldn't be bothered for them that much. So the best thing you can do is to set a very good example yourself. And be strict at home. They may not like it, but you should set some standard. That doesn't mean it has to be like a prison. Anyway, you can. You all know about these things better than me. I don't have any experience in this lifetime of being a parenting. Better you ask some parents. So, anything else?
Guru Maharaj, how do you explain a sad student that the world has been created by Krishna?
How do you explain to a science student that the world has been created by Krishna? Don't say the world has been created by Krishna. But first of all, the principle, Krishna is a person, but the principle that there is an intelligence behind all, that should be explained. It's very easy, I often do it. I usually use that steel dhaba, but I don't have it here. Okay, this came into being by chance, right? Obvious, isn't it? Why not? It's very came into being by chance? No? You can't accept that? Why not?
It hasn't been made.
How do you know? It could have come into being by chance, right? Actually, it's more, how could it have come into being by any other means than chance? You didn't see the Creator. How do you know how do you know this has been produced by intelligence? More likely, you didn't see any creator of this. How do you know it's created by anyone? If you didn't see a creator, it makes sense to say that it came into being by chance. Right? Wrong. Why don't you think it's made by chance? There's a label made by, but that could have come into being by chance also. You didn't see anyone make it. You know, how do you know? Did you see the factory where it's made? How do you know? I would say that a better argument for saying it doesn't come into being by chance is that it's complex. If you see the shape of this, or just a few stones, you could say, well, maybe that was all blown together by the wind or something like that. But this has a very specific form. Clearly, it's designed with a purpose. It requires a lot of intelligence to put this very, what we think is a very simple thing together. This cannot come into being without a lot of directed intelligence. Right? So the whole universe being unlimitedly more complex than this, how can we imagine it has come into being without any intelligence? It doesn't make any sense to think like that. It's actually completely foolish. What about this camera? That's a lot more complex than this tissue box. To say that this come into being by chance would be absurd. But even one cell in our bodies is unlimitedly more complex than this. So it doesn't make any sense to say. If we see something complex, then we know someone must have made it, right? Someone must have put it together. And with the whole universe being, even cells, what to speak of, the whole universal order. There's a new book come out by the published by the BBT called Rethinking Darwin. You can read that. Rethinking Darwin. This is what you should teach your kids. Don't teach them just some sentiment. Teach them why science is cheating. Let them understand. If you only give, when they're young, okay, before 10 or whatever, then stories of Krishna. When they're older, teach them science, Krishna conscious science. Better. Convince them. You have to be convinced yourself. You can do that. You should know all this. Teach them Krishna conscious science. Show them Vedic mathematics. At least have some outlet. Show how it's far superior to. Actually, we should know all these things. How the complete cheating of the education system, in which they say that, what is this? This Pythagoras, and he invented all these sines and cosines. But they're in India way long before. They just don't want to give credit to India. They should learn all these things. Teach them this whole education system, the whole culture. It's all just cheating and lies, actually. Tell them the truth. But most of our own devotees, they don't know this, actually. We also have to bring out books and teach them all these things. That Rethinking Darwin, you can, if you can get a copy, I heard they're all sold out and they don't want to reprint it for some reason. It's good, but it's easy to understand. You could understand it, I hope. The principles are simple. Examines the evolution of evolutionary theory and the devolution of evolutionary theory. How it became prominent in human society, and how so much of modern science just militates against it. Actually, Darwin's theory is finished. It's just a matter of time. Because scientifically it's untenable. It can't be maintained. It's going on for some time. It'll go on for some time. But even in this cheating society, there's some level. You can't maintain cheating eternally. It has to crack at some point in time. So you actually should teach the kids also how the governments are cheating with their taxation, and then the money goes in the Swiss bank accounts. You can tell them all these things. Many people in America are teaching their kids these things now. They tell them. They think that's what they need to teach their kids. How the education system is cheating you, the whole government system is cheating you. You can tell them. You should know. Prabhupada used to speak about these things. A lot. Prabhupada was way ahead. He spoke about how the financial system, paper money, is cheating people. Prabhupada spoke about this before anyone else was speaking about this. For instance, there are so many things. How they never went to the moon. There's another cheating. And now, so many people in America, like 40% of the people, don't believe that they ever went to the moon, because there's so much evidence against it. And so yeah, teach them. That's exciting, huh? That's more fun. If you just teach them, wave the lamp in arati, then they may not be so enlightened. But teach them forbidden science. Forbidden archaeology, yeah, you can teach. There is a book called Forbidden Science, which came out, I think, in the 1970s or something. It was maybe the first which pointed out all the cheating and lies in science. And there's a whole body of, you could call it underground literature or something, showing how it's all cheating. So yeah, this is what we're going to teach in our school and our college. And all the knowledge, Sanskrit, yes, but all these things too. should teach all these things. So that when the children, other children say to them, well, why don't you come and let's go for a party, McDonald's, and you can tell them, well, actually McDonald's, and tell them what McDonald's is. A lot of people in the West, they don't like McDonald's. It's like McDonald's is a symbol of the whole cheating, exploitive society. They call it McMurder. It's symbolic because of that, because it's a multinational corporation which sells you junk food. The food has no nutrition, and it's a business, and they destroy the earth one country after another. They just destroy it by their farming techniques, which are just meant for making. The whole thing is just making money. They don't care about the earth, they don't care about the people, they destroy whole cultures just so they can take over the whole species of life, whole tribes, and they just destroy it all. So they pay off the governments, and then they take so much land, and they within a few years they ruin it, and they go on to some other place and ruin that and with their farming techniques, and they torture animals, and the people who work for them, they give them the worst working conditions and everything. It's like it's a symbol. I mean, it's just a symbol of all these corporations. People are waking up now. With there was this Exxon or something scam, and then there's BP oil spill, and people are waking up more and more. I mean, then this whole economic collapse in America, which the American people had to take the banks cheating, and the bank owners, they don't suffer. The poor people, they have to suffer. So more and more people are waking up. So we at least should understand this. These governments, and they don't care. They don't care for the people. And this whole idea, the whole educational system. You can investigate. Back in the 1920s, there was a meeting of leaders in America. They decided the education, how to train people to be members of the corporate world. The whole education is meant for manipulation. Education means manipulation, that's all. And all this sense gratification, you think, I'm getting a good life. Why do you think it's a good life? Because the TV and the cinema and the newspapers and the education system all propagate to you that it's a good life. What's good about living on the 36th floor of a building with no garden and no fresh food anywhere in sight? And what's so great about that? But you know, this is a successful life. What's great about living in totally polluted situation, where every air you breathe is poisoning you? They call this is advanced life, and we believe it. We're such damn fools. We believe all this nonsense. Just brainwashed, that's all. So we teach your kids all these things. That's what should be called an alternative education, not Montessori. That's just another way of getting you to come to the same point of being a good slave of the corporate system. And thinking, oh, now I'm thinking in my own way. You're not thinking in your own way. You're just as brainwashed as everyone else. The only free people are those who are in Krishna consciousness, free from the modes of nature. Otherwise, the whole society is just cheating, beginning, middle, and end. Even if you get all these big corporate leaders and shoot them all dead, it won't make any difference. Not that that's going to happen anyway. Someone else will come and cheat. The whole atmosphere is one of cheating. You have to change the consciousness. But first of all, you have to. You can't change your kids unless you are convinced. Not by sentiment. Not just by sentiment that they're going to be devotees. When there's the whole world of sense gratification is all around them, and it's not just by sentiment that they're going to come out of that. You have to train them so they can understand what is right and what is wrong. I'm finishing here.
Yes,
it's late enough. You all have to go, and I also don't want to go on longer now. So, Hare Krishna.